What's up, everybody? This is North Idaho Now. I am Josh McDonald alongside Madison Hardy coming to you live from downtown Coeur d'Alene. Madison, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is the growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for a third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deep-rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit Hecla-Mining.com. Pardon me.
That's a mouthful of an ad. I know Chance usually punishes me and makes me read all the ads. So
really? Whenever he does it with me, he's like...
Yeah, he makes me do it. So I guess this is my... I get to pass the buck on to you this time. So it works out. Madison, how are you?
I'm doing good. But I was thinking we have to acknowledge the elephant in the room. Chance is not here, and that is because it is his birthday.
It is his birthday. And I believe that means he's turning 28?
Yes, I think we talked about that last week, me and him. He's turning 28, but...
Your birthday buddies!
Yes!
I did know this!
Yes, he is the 15th, and I am the 20th.
Wow. So I am the old man of the podcast.
Oh, when's your birthday?
I will be 32 in August.
What day in August?
August 7th.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're 0709?
07.
Well, 0907, I guess.
Yeah.
Isn't the ninth month? Yeah.
Yeah. No, 8 month.
You're right, because September's
the ninth. Like, wait, no, that's not right. In my old age, I'm getting a little senile, I guess.
You're not old. 32's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I found a gray hair in my beard.
I have gray hairs, and I'm turning 23.
Oh, you're... Wait, so Chance is 20. Wow, I am the old man. That's crazy. Well, happy birthday to both of you guys.
Yes.
Since I probably won't get to work with you before your birthday happens. And
this is the before my birthday.
Yeah. Again, I won't get to see you, probably. I doubt it.
I know. Chance never lets us hang out.
I know. I keep trying to get him like, hey, we should do a three-way one with all of us, like a three-way podcast. A three-way podcast. It's okay. We've had our share of spicy moments on this podcast. Maybe not in the North Idaho Now format, but the SMP Now. If you ever want to dig into our archives, go back and find the episode with Diana Fields Brown and Sarah Murphy. Just fast forward it to the interview. You will die laughing because Sarah Murphy, for those of you who know her, she is a realtor in across North Idaho. She says some pretty hilarious stuff on that one.
Oh, well, I have to go digging now.
So talking about a three-way podcast is literally low-hanging fruit by by standards of double entendres. So, you want to jump into the news?
I guess we should.
All right. We'll kick it off with Coeur d'Alene Press headlines, kicking off, Wednesday, May 12th?
Yes, sir.
All right. And I guess I got the first one. Police warn of counterfeit pills deadly.
Deadly.
Oh, that's scary. This is by Kay Thornbrew. A spike in drug overdoses among North Idaho teens is connected to dangerous counterfeit prescription drugs, police said Tuesday. Oh my God, how did I not hear about this? About one in six counterfeit pills circulating in the community contains a lethal dose of fentanyl, a synthetic opioid more than 50 times more powerful than morphine, the Coeur d'Alene Police Department said in a news release on Tuesday. Three deaths have been reportedly attributed to these pills since last fall. The source of the pills remains under investigation. In the meantime, Lieutenant Bill McLeod of the Coeur d'Alene Police Department said ensuring the safety of the youth in North Idaho is a top priority. Quote, please help us put an end to the devastation these families experience, McLeod said. Police encourage parents to talk to their children about the dangers of unprescribed pills. Quote, these kids are playing Russian roulette when they try these pills and don't even know they're holding a loaded gun, a parent connected to an overdose case said. Anyone with information that would be able to aid in the investigation can contact the Coeur d'Alene Police Department at 208-769-2320 or email policetips@cdaid.org.
Yeah, you know, when this story came out, I have to admit I was saddened to hear it, but fentanyl is a known killer for many famous celebrities. I know me just looking about a list, it's Mac Miller, Little Peep, Prince had a fentanyl overdose, many others as well. And that's, it's something that's been circulating, I think, a lot more recently.
It's basically medical grade heroin is really what it is. I am familiar with fentanyl being prescribed in hospitals, and it is used as a pain med and regulated in hospitals, but only for very serious conditions like pain management for like post heart surgery.
Oh wow!
Obviously, you need something strong to deal with the pain there and keep you unconscious because they don't want you waking up and irritating the chest cavity that's been operated in. But that's the kind of stuff these kids are taking. And then trying to go
party.
Yeah. You know,
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm turning 23, so I'm going to just oust myself as one of those kids. You know, I went to college. I know people that did things, and I always just looked at them and I was like, you're stupid.
Yeah. Like, I definitely am not going to say that I didn't crack open a fair share of illegal drinks when I was underage, but
I was so nervous for what you were going to say.
I really was. I was never a person, and I still am not. I'm not brave enough to, hey, a pill? Like, let's party.
Let's party.
Yeah. Yeah. You're never going to find Josh on Molly. You
know, I sincerely hope I don't.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't. It wouldn't be a good look.
All right, well, then we'll go into the next one. Sheriff seeks $4.8 million budget increase. This one was mine. The Coonan County Sheriff Office employees say their department is antiquated, with staff that is underpaid and ill-equipped for the region's growth. KCSO Sheriff Bob Norris said in his opening statement to the BOCC, Board of County Commissioners, Monday, that commissioners, welcome to the hottest real estate market in the United States and likely one of the fastest growing communities in the United States. I come to you today to partner with you on the needs of our county. Norris's fix? Increasing department expenses by approximately $4.8 million in the 2022 fiscal year. Significant contributors to the budget increase, a department speaker stressed, are Coonan County's rapid growth, the housing market, and a lack of competitive pay. This one's from KCSO Under Sheriff Dan Matos. We don't have the people, we can't hire the people because we can't pay, and we don't keep the people because we can't pay them. I'm not saying that the answer to everything is throwing money at it, but we're in a unique position. To assist in enlisting employees, KCSO is asking for several thousand promotional dollars for recruiting bonuses and job fair registration. Captain Stu Miller said in the meeting that KCSO is considering offering a $1,500 hiring bonus, which is a small price to pay, he noted, compared to Spokane's current recruiting offers of $15,000. Initially, the commissioners asked all departments to present flat, no-frills budgets, Commissioner Bill Brooks said Tuesday. And despite any rationale given by KCSO officials, Brooks said that the budget increase simply won't fly. He said, we can't just pretend we have all the money in the world. I would prefer not to cut it because these department heads know whether they can honestly cut something. But the department heads and sheriff are not willing to take a scalpel to the budget.
That's incredible. $4.8 million from where I come from in Shoshone County, that is
everything.
I'd be willing to bet that's a pretty hefty size of their operating budget for the entire county for the entire year.
So typically over the last couple of years, Coonan County has been sitting right around $100 million. But the kicker on this, and I wasn't able to conclude this in the story, is that about $4.8 million is more or less what they're expecting to be able to take in new growth, property taxes, all that jazz this year, especially after a new house bill is extremely cutting down what counties and municipalities can take in property taxes. So realistically speaking, if they gave the sheriff their whole dream list of items, there would be no money going anywhere else.
That sounds about right. And the thing that's really scary is when you have people coming in, and we'll just call it what it is, people are overpaying for homes right now.
Yes.
Taxes aren't based on what you pay for the home. They're based on assessed value. So you might spend all this money on a house. Well, your assessed value is still what's the taxable. So it's not like the influx in people is going to lead to necessarily an influx of a lot of new funds unless a lot of people are buying new property. And it's not there yet.
I do agree. There is, to a certain extent, with all the people coming in and buying homes at a higher value, you know, they're paying with cash. They're going $50,000 over the asking price because, you know what, they can.
Right.
But that does increase the appraised value of the house. It increases the appraised value of every house. So it will increase property taxes, probably not by a very significant amount, but by an amount. The kicker is, though, with the new bill that they just passed, it doesn't matter how much in property taxes you're going to get. I'm fairly certain you're capped at a certain amount, like $4 million, something like that.
Oh,
it's like they're capped at taking a certain amount total. So if their property tax is X million, they can only take this little chunk more from new growth and URDs and all that jazz.
Interesting.
So they're going to be limited no matter what. So this budget, realistically, is not realistic. So we're going to just have to see how that goes.
I guess that goes to the old notion, you always come in high, though. You come in high, and if they're like, all right, no, we can give you $2 million, though. Okay, we can work. It's still $2 million more than what they had.
That's the thing. Even though, you know, Brooks said that they're not willing to take a scalpel to the budget, they're going to have to. There's no way. There's other things that need to be paid for right now.
Right.
So.
Beautiful. Moving on to Thursday, May 13th, headline, The Buoys of Summer. This is by Bill Buey, and that is an incredible headline. It's estimated, and the story, I'm reading the context of the story for the first time. This is so good. It is estimated that about 50 people will be arrested this year on Idaho's waterways for operating a boat under the influence of alcohol. Ooh. The majority of those will be in North Idaho. Quote, education is what we prefer, said Kootenai County Sheriff's Marine Deputy Gerald Wallace. If the education doesn't work, we sometimes have to issue a citation. The retired sheriff from Colorado joined the KCSO in 2018. He said most Kootenai County boaters are responsible, safe, and follow the rules. But some will drink too much. Some won't wear life jackets. Some will go too fast and ignore no wake rules. Some just want to have fun at the expense and endangerment of others. Marine deputies will be ready and waiting for them. Sergeant Ryan Miller, KCSO Recreation Safety Supervisor, took over in January as in charge of search and rescue operations. The 13-person dive team and the marine patrol of the county's 18 lakes and 54 miles of rivers. This summer, he'll oversee a team of 10 seasonal marine deputies who will be supervised by two full-time marine deputies. Wednesday evening, they were on Lake Coeur d'Alene, launching jet skis and boats from Higgins Point as part of a month-long training in the classroom and on the water. They're preparing for what they will face each day this summer, and it's not all about fun in the sun. Not everyone boating on Lake Coeur d'Alene adheres to the laws and is courteous and friendly to officers. So while deputies hope all is smooth sailing, they will be ready for encounters with belligerent boaters too. Quote, you never know what to expect, so we try to prepare them for everything, Miller said.
It's actually true. I sat in with the KCSO Marine Division a couple weeks ago, and we do get the majority of the waterway DUIs. We also have a good chunk of the registered boaters in the entire state.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. We, over in Shoshone, we don't have marine deputies. But we are seeing an increased number of people taking those speedboats, the ones that sit like on top of the water, not in the water, up and down our rivers where there's probably rules against wake because I don't think at any point is that river even 100 feet wide. So I don't know that you can be 100 feet away from a riverbank if the river is not even 100 feet wide. But they fly up and down the river like 50, 60 miles an hour. It's around blind corners and gosh, I being a Marine deputy sounds like one of the coolest and scariest and most unpredictable jobs out there.
It's kind of, what is that one movie where they are state highway patrolmen.
Super troopers.
Yes. I feel like it would be something like that. Because I feel like they would get out there and be like, okay.
Like super troopers and Baywatch mixed together.
Yeah. You know, like, put on your life vest, stop drinking at the wheel, and people would be like, screw you, man. Like, I'm just going to ride my boat away.
You can't catch me. Yeah. I would probably be that guy out there drunkenly, like, I would turn into, like, a full-on pirate. Be like, all right, ready the cannons, here come the police. Looks like we're going to war. Just kidding, I don't own a boat. They don't pay me enough to own a boat.
I feel like owning a boat is one of those things that sounds really fun, but then I've talked to so many people who are maybe interested in getting one, and I've never talked to one about this that already has a boat, but someone that's interested, and they're like telling me it's about the same as like a car.
Yeah.
And then there's the upkeep, and you can only use it seasonally, and then like, do you just store it in your garage? Is that taking up your whole garage? Do you have to get a storage container? These are all things that process through my head, and then I don't know if it's really worth it. Yeah.
I recently was sitting in a hot tub on the rooftop of Silver Mountain.
I was recently sitting in a hot tub.
With a man named Will Sugg, who's from Seattle. Really cool dude. He lives.
I'm so concerned for you right now.
Yeah. He lives in a 42-foot sailboat in the harbor next to Seattle.
Cool.
And he does microchips for work off his boat. 42-foot sailboat.
And, you know, and then we're here right now sitting in
it. And we're not in that same life. We're not living that same life.
I feel like he has to be very at peace with his life right now.
He's the coolest dude I've ever met. And I met him in a hot tub on the roof of Silver Mountain.
I thought I was the coolest dude you've ever met.
You're up there. You're top five.
Thank you.
Not chance, though.
Okay. And then we have Good Food, Good Company. This one is also mine. Downtown Coeur d'Alene was filled with music, vendors, and people Wednesday night at the Kootenai County Farmers Market Association's first midweek market.
Hooray!
What was playing? A cover of Chris Stapleton's Tennessee Whiskey. The crowd, Finn Livingston and his friend Harry, dancing the afternoon away. April, Finn's mother, was happily standing by, smiling at her young son and enjoying the festivities. Heading into their second year as vendors, Kendra and Adam Boots, the owners and growers of Winifred Farms, were confident that Wednesday markets are supreme. Quote, it's a really good market with really good people, Kendra grinned. I really like the people we work with, too. The vendors around us want to help each other. We learn from each other, which is fun. Ellen Scriven from Killarney Farm has had a long time to learn the tricks of the trade. A seasoned veteran of the Kootenai County Farmers Market, Scriven has set up a booth every season since 1996. She simply loves to grow her goods and have people enjoy them, Scriven said, which is evident through the 50 different crops she tends. She said, I just love giving people good food, nutritious food, the labors of my love, and the love of everybody working on the farm. Having participated in the event for 25 years, she has seen the market, the vendors, and families change. She said, some of these people I've seen grow up, parents who have kids, then many years go by, and those kids bring their kids. She said, people we associate with, people who love to see our stand, didn't come back last year, but we also see a lot of new faces, new things. Though the season had only just begun, Scriven was confident that the 2021 market would be strong with the help and love from the community.
That's awesome. I love farmers markets. The fact that they're coming back is such a welcome sign of a return to normal for me. Mm-hmm. The one in Coeur d'Alene, the downtown one that you're talking about, that one's always really cool. Shoshone has one that they're about to kick off. I go to the one in the Spokane Valley all the time. I don't know if that one's going to happen, but I love farmers markets. I don't look like the kind of guy who might appreciate a farmer's market, but when it comes to fresh farmer's market vegetables, maybe I get them pickled. Maybe I eat them raw. It doesn't matter.
You're just a big squishy man, aren't you?
I am. The squishy might be the most accurate definition of me I've ever heard. Don't let the beard fool you. I am very much squishy.
Yeah, I love farmers market. When I first moved up here, I started reading the paper when I got the job. And one of the first stories I read was by Bill Bewley, who wrote about the market coming back. And I remember thinking I was really excited because I grew up actually working at a farmers market. I worked at a bakery for 6 years, and we'd always sell our pastries on Saturday. So it was always a very, it was a moment for me. And I remember my best friend, she was living in Spokane Valley when I moved up here, which was really nice because I was very lonely. One of the first girls' nights, quote unquote, we had was we went to the farmer's market. And
in Spokane Valley?
No, here.
Oh, here.
And now, coincidentally, because the farmer's market's right on 5th Street, I live right next to it, like kitty corner.
That's awesome.
So it's this huge, big wraparound moment. If anyone just heard me say that I live right by the farmer's market, please don't try and find me.
Don't. Leave her alone, or I'll be less squishy, and I'll come find you.
Squish.
Squish. I'll be doing the squishing. Moving on to Friday, May 14th, headline, Ruthie Johnson Lived an American Dream. This is by Devin Weeks. I got to watch Devin write this story, so I kind of almost feel involved a little bit. Ruthie Johnson, fondly known as the Grand Dame of North Idaho Republicans, died Wednesday at Hospice of North Idaho. She was 96. Wow. A diehard GOP supporter and a woman who stood for what she believed in, Johnson was known for making waves, making headlines, and most importantly, making friends across the political aisle. Ruthie came from extremely humble beginnings, working on a family dairy in the Silver Valley, and was thrust into poverty when her father died when she was only 10. Growing up, money was so scarce, her family could only afford one pair of shoes a year. Her son, Dr. Duke Johnson of Rathdrum, said on Thursday. Duke's voice choked and he paused for a moment before he shared something that his mom said that will stay with him forever, something very telling about the person she was. Quote, she said, you know, we never ever thought we were poor. We just thought we had less than everyone else did, but we were never poor. That line is something that's not in our vernacular anymore. And that was a trademark of the Greatest Generation. That was a trademark that built America. That's kind of an uplifting quote. Ruthie became a devout and dedicated Republican leader. She formed the largest Republican women group in the area early in her work. She served as a precinct committee chairperson for more than half a century, worked as a delegate at several Republican national conventions, served 24 years as U.S. Senator Jim McClure's district assistant from Northern Idaho, and rubbed elbows with prominent Republican leaders, including Ronald Reagan. Ruthie is preceded in death by her husband, Wayne, with whom she shared a decades-long loving marriage and had three children, two of whom are doctors and several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Duke praised his mother's unsinkable spirit and ability to overcome countless obstacles to have a life story embedded in the American dream. Quote, it's only in America would someone be able to come from abject poverty to having dinner with the presidents, he said. She was a rare breed. Whew. That is a sad story. And kind of amazing that I guess I just didn't realize that we had someone so influential in our midst. And she grew up in a family dairy farm in my neck of the woods. So I'm a little, might want to do some background on Miss Ruthie Johnson. Maybe give her a shout out in the old SMP coming up.
Aww. Yeah, there was a quote that Devin included in the story that I thought was just so cool. She had dinner with Ronald Reagan.
That's amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Ronald Reagan was famous before he was the president.
Yeah, he was a movie actor?
Yeah. Yeah, so like not only was it cool that he was the president, but it's also kind of amazing, like, this guy didn't have to be a president, so he ended up as a celebrity president, which we know all about now at this point. I think everyone from now on is going to be a celebrity president. But look at Ruthie Johnson just going for it and, yeah, and making, like, in the 80s, women in politics were still very much kind of kept at arm's length.
Yes, that was something I thought was very interesting, that she did all of this, and she was 96, so she came and grew up in an era where women were really not involved in anything big with.
Right. So, big props to Ruthie for breaking down some gender barriers.
Absolutely. And sending some love to her families. Although, I do have a question for you. What was your favorite president?
My favorite president? Come back to me on that.
Okay.
Come back to me on that. Well, I'll have an answer for you shortly.
Because mine's Teddy Roosevelt, although I do think Kennedy is quite handsome.
Yes, quite handsome. And Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, actually came through Wallace.
He did.
So he's probably our most locally revered president, but for us in Shoshone anyway. But let me come back to that.
Because I think he also went through Harrison. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was well traveled and kind of nice to think that he stopped and made time for all the
Idaho ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And then we'll go to Hayden Lake ballot measure seeks nearly $1 million tax hike. This one's by Bill Bewley. The city of Hayden Lake is proposing to increase property taxes by nearly $1 million in the next fiscal year. The measure that will be on Tuesday's ballot says the estimated total of property taxes in the next fiscal year would be $1.1 million. It's currently $159,000, so the new amount represents a hike of $969,000, almost $970,000.
Wow.
When asked by the press what the money would be used for and why the tax increase was being proposed, Tina West, deputy city clerk and treasurer, said she could not comment. She said Mayor Jim Ackerman could not comment, nor could council members. In an email to the press, she said, "I am severely limited by the Public Integrity in Elections Act regarding what I can say about the ballot question at issue. Even so, I can state that the city's current levy rate is amongst the lowest of all cities in the state of Idaho, given that the city is simply exercising its legal right to ask the voters to approve an increase in property tax revenues. The majority of each of such revenues would be used to repair and or reconstruct city streets, most of which are in poor condition." Hayden Lake resident Jim King, also an attorney, said the city has clearly failed to act transparently in regards to the proposed property tax hike. He said about 15 people showed up at City Hall for a scheduled meeting last week, during which the proposal was an item to be discussed. The meeting was abruptly canceled, with those notified by a sign on the door. This Hayden Lake City Council is scheduled to meet next May 19th, the day after the election, and looking at the tax hike, based on 800 residents, that means property taxes would go from about $200 a year to more than $1,400 a year.
Ooh.
The additional amount must be approved by 60% of eligible voters on May 18th. If anyone doesn't know what Hayden Lake is, it is very, very, very small.
You know, I've actually never even seen it.
Today, one of our reporters asked, where does Hayden end and Hayden Lake begin? And I think that's a good question, because I have no idea.
I've actually never seen Hayden, the lake, like the actual Hayden Lake. I just thought it was like a cheeky name for a place that was next to Coeur d'Alene for the longest time until
someone... You mean like Dalton Gardens?
Yeah. It was just like, oh, we're Hayden Lake. You know, like.
That's exactly the voice that they would have. I mean, yeah. It's from what I've seen, there's a lot of really nice houses in Hayden Lake. I'm sure there's also...
Occupied by people named Dottie and Todd, to quote. That's my Parks and Rec reference of the episode. That's the only one I'll give out.
But, yeah, so I could not imagine this will pass, but I guess we'll have to
see. You have to wait and see. Stranger things have happened. So I have my answer for you. Favorite president? I have two, and they're fairly recent. I always admired George W. Bush.
Senior or junior?
Junior.
Okay.
I have a very vivid memory of, be it the Secret Service, whoever it was, who whispered into his ear during that, when he was reading that book at the school when 9/11 happened. And he, like, kept his poise and, like, didn't, like, stand up and raise him. Like, I always thought that his poise there was very... inspirational. Mm-hmm. And then the first president I ever voted for, that I was old enough to vote for, was President Obama. And I was a big President Obama fan. I know that's probably not going to get me like a lot of like
our downloads just went down.
Yeah, it's probably not going to get me a lot of popular votes. But also I think, a couple years ago, if like John McCain had ran mm-hmm. on the Republican ticket a few years ago, I would have voted for John McCain.
So sad.
Right. So I find myself being very, very, very in the middle. But I'm also like, hey, if we can ever get like Andrew Yang, I'll be on the Yang gang. Like, I'm totally for that universal income. I love it. So Now that you know my weird political leanings, let's move into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines before anyone gets too upset with me. This is for, I believe, what, Wednesday, mm-hmm. May 12th. Commission baffled by Bonner County Republican Central Committee's bond stance. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. A decision by the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, whew, that is a mouthful,
BCRCC,
to come out against the county's solid waste bond is baffling, Bonner County Commission Chairman Dan McDonald said. Quote, I thought Republicans stood for lower fees and taxes, yet they are opposing a bond measure that allows the county to take out a low-interest loan at 1.75% that will assure rates stay flat, McDonald said. McDonald said failure of the bond could result in a dramatic increase in the solid waste yearly user fee, being quoted saying, so by opposing the bond, the BCRCC is supporting dramatically higher fees, he said. The Central Committee recently recommended against the $8.72 million bond and against a $3.4 million supplemental levy proposed by the West Bonner County School District. BCRCC officials said the recommendation is based on a principle against incurring debt. Instead, the committee said the matter should be placed on the November ballot. McDonald said that BCRCC officials claim that voters haven't had enough time to understand the issue, understand that the issue doesn't make sense. McDonald said officials have been discussing the issue since 2019, speaking to local media about the proposed bond and resultant project and holding three public workshops. In all, county officials were clear, McDonald said. The goal was to get the rate to the point where the county could qualify for a low-interest loan. Quote, taking a loan and doing the work now when it will be the lowest cost we will see saves the taxpayers from paying extra costs due to inflation, McDonald said. So not only is the interest rate low and not only does the loan allow us to not dramatically increase solid waste fees, but the taxpayers also realize the savings from not being strapped with inflationary costs in the future. Much of the loan would pay for improvements at the Colburn Waste Transfer Site, including a new waste transfer building, improvements to the existing transfer building, a new household hazardous waste disposal building, and general improvements. In addition, it would cover improvements to some of the other transfer sites like Dufort, Dickensheet, and Idaho Hill. We start getting into bonds and levies and things like that, and while I understand the concept, I guess if you're not in those communities, it's really hard to speak to those kinds of things because if you don't understand the climate, although I do find it interesting that something so frugal and financially sound would be opposed by the county's Republican Central Committee. And I do tend to follow Mr. McDonald's line of logic. In his quote.
Yes. You know, the thing is about all of that, I kind of do understand. They're basically asking that they can hold off for a little bit, put it on the November ballot until more people can understand what's going on. And I don't ever think that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I just think that when you shoot something down immediately or maybe argue against something, especially when you're a political party that has so much strength.
Yeah.
In an area, it can just put a very sour taste in people's mouths, and I do worry that this might turn poorly.
One of the things I always think about when I hear any group trying to say, well, we'll push it to the November ballot, usually means that they don't, I feel like they're not confident mm-hmm. in their stance for the, it's the primary, right? The May primary, and the November is the general. So I know it's a May election,
yes.
But I think people just assume that they can get more people to turn out in November. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Kootenai County, or I'm sorry, the Bonner County Republican Central Committee doesn't feel confident that the measure, that they have enough support to keep the measure from happening. So they're wanting to push it to the November. That's the way I always interpret things. That's where the wheels turn for me is if I say, well, let's push it to the next election. Okay, so you don't think you can
pass this.
You don't think you can either pass it or you don't think that your side will come out on the side that you – the desired outcome.
Yes.
But that's just me speculating wildly. And like I said, I don't live in that area, so I feel like I'm not acclimated enough to the political climate to accurately speak to that.
Good man. Sandpoint Independence, Inc. pulls application for 4th celebration. This one is also by Carolyn Lobsinger. Sandpoint Independence Day, Inc. has withdrawn its permit application to host any 4th of July events.
This is a crazy story.
The decision to pull the applications follows a 4-2 vote by the Sandpoint City Council last week to affirm the denial of their permit, following the Sandpoint Lions Club to host the event instead. Ron Korn, SID president, said in a letter to the city, "After our appeal last week to the city council, it became extremely clear to us that the city has no intention of following their own rules and policies. Sid had plans for events this year that would have exceeded an already superior Independence Day in 2020. Because of the council's decision, Sid officials said they could not, in good conscience, enter into a contract with the city to host events for the holiday. We find it unethical and immoral to do business with a corrupt government entity whose elected officials and employees refuse to abide by the policies as written while using the same policies to defer, obfuscate, and delay certain volunteer groups who do not align with the administration's personal politics," the group said in the letter. As a matter of principle, Sid officials said that unless there is a change of administration and elected officials make decisions that do not discriminate based on political agendas, Korn said the group would no longer host any events that require permitting through the city of Sandpoint. In the letter, Korn said Independence Day should have never been made in a political issue, but the city found a way to make it happen. We feel our personal politics were a factor in the city's decision, and that is unacceptable for what is supposed to be a nonpartisan government entity. The celebration hosted by Sid in 2020 was nonpolitical, and had the group been issued the permit this year, that would have again been the case, Sid officials said. Sandpoint Lions Club will be hosting all 4th of July events, and members said the club is looking forward to providing the community with a great hometown celebration as it has in the past. The conflict came after the new group, which hosted the festivities last year, and Sandpoint Lions submitted dueling applications for the celebration. Okay, I'm going to back up for a second here. I don't quite understand what is the political issue.
So I read through the story a couple different times, and it sounds like they have received dueling applications for 4th of July celebrations.
Okay.
And the groups up there don't see eye to eye on how the 4th of July should be celebrated. Again, we don't live there, so speaking on the political climate of Bonner County, which is notoriously conservative.
So is most of the state.
As is most of the state, but Bonner County tends to be as red as you can be.
Blood red.
Blood red, very crimson, like North Idaho College red. Maybe not. Maybe not North Idaho College red. Maybe that was... too soon.
You got too excited with that one.
Too excited.
It's wine.
Oh, yeah, it's wine. It is. Oh, man. It's Kool-Aid Man red.
It's wine, and then Boise's like a silver blue.
Yes, yes. It's a very delicate shade of blue. But it sounds like the way they want to celebrate it is maybe a little more excited. Maybe a little more passionate than the other group was wanting it celebrated, and these two groups conflicted, and they couldn't find a resolution. So instead of granting instead of cutting the baby in half, to get biblical on you, to drop a King Solomon reference, instead of cutting the baby in half, they just decided that no one was going to get the permit. Now, that being said, it would not surprise me.
No one's getting the permit. No one.
Yeah.
So there's no 4th of July celebration.
Yeah. It sounds like.
Well, that's terrible.
I would not be surprised if the city didn't come in and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And if you guys want to come alongside and coexist, fine.
Okay.
And that's, again, that's speculative. But that is my take on what I've heard.
That's your hot take.
Hot take. Dropping hot takes. But yeah, kind of an interesting situation here, because This is like the first time that they've ever had the dual applications, that these two entities haven't come in and tried to work together. So, you never know. You never know. Life is crazy. Moving on to Friday, May 14th. Little brief here. New principal at Priest River Elementary. Priest River Elementary will soon have a new principal pending board approval. In an email sent Wednesday morning, West Bonner County School District Superintendent Paul Anselmo wrote that Lynn Parker had been selected following Connie Kimball's retirement. Quote, after going through the interview process and checking references, I am pleased to announce the hiring of Lynn Parker as the principal of Priest River Elementary School, Anselmo wrote.
Woohoo! So, go good. Lynn Parker.
Good for them. We have a lot of new administration changes over in our neck of the woods. It sounds like Coeur d'Alene actually recently hired a new superintendent.
Yes.
So.
And then Deanna Nicarado is fairly recent, last 2 years.
Yeah. So it's always nice. While I do love teachers that stay or educators that stay in their positions for long periods of time, I also do believe that having fresh faces in education constantly is probably the way to avoid things getting stagnant.
Absolutely.
So keeping it fresh. Hey, initial success or total failure. Mad Bomber Brewing, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery to try their newest beer back on tap, the In Memoriam IPA. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho.
And now we're going to your neck of the woods, huh?
Head in over the hill, into the holler.
Speaking of 4th of July.
I know, right? Headed over 4th of July. Nice. Nice. Well done. Headlines for Friday, May 14th. Law Day in Shoshone County. This is by myself, Josh McDonald.
Not myself.
By myself. All by myself. JK. Love you, Chance. Happy birthday. Stay away. The Shoshone County Courthouse played host to Law Day last Wednesday, where District Judge Scott Wayman had various criminal cases presented before him. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the day's proceedings were streamed online via Zoom. Only individuals who are currently incarcerated and essential courtroom personnel were allowed into the courtroom. Among the cases heard were those of Cody Konecki, who on Wednesday morning, Konecki pleaded not guilty to multiple charges stemming from multiple incidents. The first incident, which is carrying charges of grand theft, burglary, and conspiracy to commit a crime, occurred in 2019. Now get this, this dude stole, he just went for it. Konecki allegedly conspired with two other individuals and then was accused of illegally entering a storage unit in Smelterville and stealing multiple firearms, multiple gun cases, a collection of knives, a television, a computer, a scanner, a printer, several pieces of fishing gear, and a briefcase, according to court documents. He just went for it.
That's multiple trips.
The multiple firearms, that is like stealing firearms is like the biggest no-no of them all. Like that puts you on like federal government watch list type stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah, you're not allowed to steal firearms. The second incident occurred in March of this year, where Konecki was arrested and charged with possession of methamphetamine
so that's how he could carry all of the stuff.
Just all at one time. As well as two counts of possession of drug paraphernalia. By entering his not guilty pleas, Konecki's cases will head towards a jury trial that will be scheduled at a later date. The Idaho Supreme Court did just drop another bombshell on our legal system saying that they could not hold trials due to COVID-19 for like a certain period. So, yeah, there's another.
I thought we were out of the woods with that one.
I thought we were, too. Maybe something changed due to one of those little spikes or something. But
it was one of those little spikes.
So, a couple weeks ago, Shoshone County spiked up into the orange for, like, a hot minute.
No, we have multiple counties going back to orange.
That's no good. No bueno.
Not like anyone's going to do anything about it.
Yeah. Who cares? COVID's a fad. Job fair proves valuable to students and businesses alike. This is also by Josh McDonald. The growing trend of businesses being unable to find employees has some local businesses getting creative in their search for workers. Local business owner Luann Werfel, along with Wallace Junior Senior High School principal Chris Lund, collaborated with one another and decided to put on a job fair in the Wallace High School last Friday. Werfel was not only an organizer, but an active participant, as her business has been frantically searching for employees to fill holes in their schedule, which are beginning to impact how her myriad of businesses are able to operate. Werfel, along with her husband Rob, owns and operates the Blackboard Marketplace, which includes the Blackboard Cafe, Todd's Bookstore and Coffee, the Fox and the Hare Mountain Wear. She spoke about the lack of employees and people seeking employment is forcing them to change their business hours of operation. However, by utilizing the job fair, she was able to find some prospective employees too, and at the very least, help them get through the busy tourist season. Quote, I think the job fair went very well and the kids were engaged, Werfel said. I think it was good for the kids to look at what was being offered and maybe see where they could fit based on their own interests and personalities. Businesses like the Werfels or the Wallace Inn, Silver Mountain and Lookout Mountain, and Loving Care and More all offer different types of entry-level jobs, which allow kids to have a choice instead of just taking whatever is out there. Some kids have that personality where they just want to keep their heads down and work hard. Others might want to work by themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that because there is a need for those kinds of employees, Werfel said. Others might want a more social and dynamic type of job, but this allowed all of them to see what is out there before stepping into a job. Lund was pleased with how the fair went and noted its importance to both the school and the community. The job fair was so important for our community because so many of our local businesses are looking for workers, Lund said. It was also important to our schools because many of our students have been working with our career counselor, building resumes, and preparing for job interviews for summer work.
Awesome.
Yeah, we have help wanted signs on like every building. I know there's quite a few in Coeur d'Alene. I don't know that I've ever seen it in the Silver Valley where literally every business can take one or two employees right now. It's crazy. And I guess so I graduated in 2007. Mm-hmm. So 2007, there were jobs for about a year. And then the 2008 economic crisis hit and there was nothing. So like I've been in the spot where there's like no jobs. And so you take whatever's there. Like, I guess I'm going to go be a line cook at McDonald's. I guess I'm going to be a night janitor at a grocery store or a nursing home. Like, you didn't really get an option. You took what was there. And now, like, if I wanted to, I could go work at Blackboard, take a $1,000 sign-on bonus to be a chef. It's crazy, but it's there.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy, crazy.
And then let's go all the way up north.
All north.
To Bonner's Ferry Herald. This one is by Victor Corral Martinez. Murder case against Moore dismissed. The second-degree murder case against Daniel Lee Moore has been dismissed. Moore, 63, had been charged on March 12, 2020 for the fatal shooting of Brian Drake. However, following a ruling by First District Court Judge Barbara Buchanan in mid-April to reject reconsideration of an earlier suppression of a confession by Moore, defense attorney Catherine Bolton filed a motion to dismiss the case against her client on April 14th. Moore was initially charged on Thursday, August 27th, with second-degree murder and the use of a deadly weapon in the commission of a felony in connection with the fatal shooting of Drake on March 12, 2020. Prosecutors alleged Moore had, with forethought but not premeditated, did intentionally murder Brian Drake using a pistol and shooting through a window, hitting Drake in the back. The trial was set to begin April 12th, but was rescheduled when the trial was moved to Kootenai County after Bolton requested a change of venue accepted by the prosecution. In her motion to dismiss the case, Bolton said the prosecution relied exclusively on the now-suppressed confession to establish a probable cause and lacked any additional evidence to support charges against Moore. She said, the district court must dismiss a criminal complaint if it finds that the defendant was held to answer without probable cause. Bolton argued, adding the state failed to meet even the most minimal standards for charging someone in a criminal case.
I want to read more of the backstory on this.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
Because for it to just straight up be dismissed.
Yeah, that kind of scares me.
Yeah, that's like not. That's like not he, like he
did.
Was,
he did shoot the weapon.
Yeah.
He did kill the person.
Right.
So now it's just like nothing happened?
Right, right. Like not, I mean, unless, so Jeopardy laws say you can't be charged for the same crime twice, but he, so I don't know if there's third degree murder. I don't know if they go manslaughter. They have to charge him with something different, correct?
Yes. And first degree to murder is intentional.
Right, there has to be like signs of premeditation and all that stuff, which is, we've actually covered a couple different murder situations over in the Silver Valley, which mind-blowing that that would be something that we've handled, but we have. But yeah, interesting situation up there in Bonner's Ferry, and it looks like Victor did a pretty good job keeping tabs on it.
He always does.
Victor's a solid dude. I want to meet Victor. I haven't met him yet.
Me too.
Yeah, we need to get up there and we need to hang out with our Bonner's Ferry and Bonner County people. Just show them a little bit of love.
Okay.
Well, we plowed through that episode. Look at us go.
I know. We don't even need Chance. Right. Chance who?
Yeah. Happy birthday, Chance. Why don't you stay in Boise for a while, bro? But
no, just kidding.
No, come back. I really don't want to have to do all of Shoshone by myself. It's already a lot for the two of us. I can't imagine it just being one of us. So please come back. You can listen to our podcast on what? Apple, Spotify?
Yeah, Apple, Spotify, iTunes Music, basically anything that hosts.
Stitcher, Player FM, Pandora, all those sweet spots.
Oh, the sweet spots.
All the sweet spots.
And then if you're interested in any of the stories that we talked about, or as Chance likes to say, any that we didn't talk about, you can find everything online at cdapress.com, bonnercountydailyb.com, bonnersferrydailyherald.com, and of course, shoshonenewspress.com.
Yep, yep, yep. And once again, we'd like to thank the Hecla Mining Company for this episode. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit hecla-mining.com. That is it for Friday. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have an awesome weekend.